This is the TSN MMA show with Aaron Bronstetter and Bazooka Joe Valtellini.
Rafael Dos Anjos cements himself as the top contender at welterweight. Does that mean anything? We'll find out. Josh Emmett arrives with a bang in the featherweight division. If he can make the weight, how big of a factor can he be? Canadians go 4-1 in Winnipeg, but with Sirkunov losing, who will emerge as the next big Canadian in the UFC? And she beat the then-unbeatable Rousey. Can Holm do the unthinkable twice? We'll preview UFC 219 and discuss whether it is, in fact, possible for Holly Holm to beat Cyborg.
Yeah, I'm excited for that fight. I think we finally have a new contender for Chris Cyborg, and I think this is probably one of her toughest types in her career. So let's go Holly Holm.
Yeah, probably. I mean, when you think about Cyborg's past opponents, I mean, Gina Carano was good at the time, but had nowhere near the skills that Holly
Holm
had.
She wasn't the mixed martial artist we saw today, right? Mm-hmm. We saw a good striker do well for women's, but now Holly Holm, we have someone who can compete on all levels.
Yeah, and I really don't want to take anything away from Tanya Evinger, who Cyborg had just beaten in her last fight, because Evinger's a really tough fighter and a really tricky fighter with a lot of tools. And her striking just wasn't where it needs to be to beat Cyborg.
But she made a fun fight. That's what she was throwing big haymakers. She was catching her. So I think she did a good job at showing good heart and staying in there, even though she was overmatched. But I think Cyborg is going to finally have a true test in someone her size, her physique, Holly Holm's ability to finish. I think she's got the full package to really give Cyborg some trouble.
Yeah, I think we'll get a good glimpse of what Evinger's actually all about in her next fight. That'll really show us where she's at. Because, I mean, she was fighting up a division, just like Holm is in this fight. But in terms of Cyborg, she's getting older, and Holm has the striking pedigree to beat just about anybody. You know, when Holm did lose, she lost to Tate via choke, and that was, she was winning that fight, I think, hands down. And we'll talk about that fight a little bit later on, the one with Tate. For unfortunate reasons, with the passing of Robert Fallas,
yep.
In the last couple days. And then Holm in her other loss was to Shevchenko, where, you know, Shevchenko is a really good Muay Thai fighter, smaller opponent. And that's how this fight could turn out. You know, if there's no knockout in this fight, you could just see Holm getting outpointed by Cyborg. I mean, Cyborg fought the best Muay Thai fighter in the world and held her own.
And held her own, yeah. No problem. Yeah, I think if Holm can stick to her long strikes, because she does have a height and reach advantage, which she's got to definitely use against Cyborg. And you just got to hit and move, pick her out on the outside. And I think Holly Holm's, with her ability to throw those high kicks, unpredictable, I think she's got a good chance. I really think she's got a good chance. But what Cyborg's good at is just controlling and making it her fight. Like, she's going to make Holly Holm stay in the pocket. She's going to be able to shut her down. So can Holly move and avoid that power? That's going to be the test.
Well, if Holly does win that fight, and I know we're probably going to talk about it a little bit later on, but the resume is huge. It's win over Rousey, bantamweight champion. Win over Cyborg, featherweight champion.
Party the spoiler, only, for
well,
sure.
Yeah, the only two-division women's champion in UFC history. Could go down as one of the best ever, if not the best ever, based on that resume. Now, I don't know if based on seeing her lose to Shevchenko and Tate, how that argument holds up nowadays. But also losing to Durandamy, I should mention that as well.
Yeah, that was the close call fight, right?
Yeah, exactly. So she had lost three in a row, but bounced back recently with a win over Betch-Kohea. But, if she would have beaten Durandamy, now suddenly you would have had a two-division champion as well. But a win over Cyborg to become a two-division champion is different than a win over Durandamy.
Absolutely. I think it's just going to be amazing for her in general, because it just shows her character as a fighter, and I think that's what we can rely on Holly Holm. She'll fight all the big names anytime, and I think she jumped on this opportunity against Cyborg when nobody wanted it, right?
So, well, the price had to be right, and there was a big negotiation, and you know, her agent, her manager, Lenny Fresquez, who's a kind of a boxing manager that's made his way into MMA, has always put Holly's price tag where he thinks her value is. You know, she kind of takes a step back, and he always says, this is what she's worth, and this is what we want. And eventually, this was the fight to make. The UFC's ponied up the money, and here she is.
Yeah, I think that's how you get fights with Cyborg. You got to pay people the money to do it, right?
Yeah.
I mean, I think a lot of people are really still questioning her natural abilities, which is kind of, I understand. So I think a lot of people are like, hey, she might be on it, but you're going to have to put me a good payday to balance that out, right?
Right, yeah.
I mean,
and also to move up a weight class, and there's a whole bunch of things to consider.
Yeah, definitely. So, I mean, I think this is the right fight. I think Holly Holm has the ability, though. I wouldn't be surprised if Holly Holm takes this one.
Wow.
I really feel like Holly Holm has a really good chance.
All right, well, we'll have to see. I mean, that's coming up.
You're not giving her a big chance, or?
Well, I mean,
just seeing.
I'd like to think that she can do it, but I just think she's going to be way undersized compared to Cyborg. And I think if you're talking about just strictly technical striking, that Cyborg's a pretty technical striker herself.
Yeah, so she has the power advantage for sure.
Yeah, you have to overcome a couple hurdles to get a win over Cyborg. But, you know, I'm also wouldn't rule out Cyborg winning 3 or 4 rounds in a row and Holm catching her in the 5th round. You just never know. Like, Holm, that head kick that she throws can take anybody out if it connects the way that it connected against Bechkohe and against Ronda.
Well, I still think it's her boxing, right, that could do a lot of the damage as well. I think if her kick isn't landing, she has the ability to box. Her professional boxing background, and even as a traditional Muay Thai fighter, they typically have problems with boxers. So if Cyborg's going to use a traditional slower pace power style, a boxer that's good with angles, volume punching, knows how to use her length and reach, could beat anyone. And I think that's the style and approach she has to do. A lot of good volume and moves. She can't just stand there.
That's a very interesting fight. It might be the two, you know, highest, I guess, pedigreed women facing off of all time, unless you consider Holm versus Rousey, that fight. But I don't know. I mean, Cyborg's resume, I think, at this point, is up there with anybody's. You know, that being said, I don't know how, you know, she's when I say the resume, it's like she hasn't lost in like a decade, but she hasn't really beat the top.
Well, her record is 18-1, and she only has one loss. When was her last loss?
It was her first career fight.
First ever.
Her first ever career fight. So, I mean, you almost don't even take that into consideration because it was so long ago.
Yeah.
Let's go back to Winnipeg. Not actually go there because it's cold. But it was just as cold here. I feel bad. I was telling people, oh, you're stuck in Winnipeg, and then the weather got here got really cold.
Yeah, I don't know. Like, even now, like, when I'm traveling with all my friends from all over the world, they're always like, well, you're from Canada. You should be okay with the cold. Like, I'm not okay with the cold. I hate the cold. It doesn't just because I'm from Canada doesn't mean I love the cold.
Yeah, exactly. Like, so, polar bears up here.
No. So, I'm like, I live in a condo. My car is underground parking. I don't go outside. The only time I'm going outside is from my car to the gym. That's the only time I'm going outside. I don't love the cold. I don't want to be in the cold. So, yes, just because I'm Canadian doesn't mean. No.
My tip to you.
Yeah, no way. That's one of the reasons I won't. Yeah. Those morning walks in the snow? No, thank you.
I had to do that yesterday.
No,
good
thank
times.
You.
Going to get the mail. All right, so Rafael Dos Anjos beats Robbie Lawler across, you know, unanimous decision 50-45 across the board. Really a dominant performance for Rafael that I really didn't see coming. But it's something that we almost should have expected. You know, Lawler in his fight against Cerrone was not the same Lawler. It looks like he slowed down a little bit since losing to Tyron.
And my point was that he wasn't slowing down earlier. I was talking to my friends. I'm like, look at what Robbie Lawler's done in his career. He was so dominant when he was younger. Then he went through this big slump, and now he's at the highest part of the sport. So he's been such at a high level for so long, and like, he hasn't been slowing down. I think now we're starting to see those little signs of him slowing down.
I think we sort of saw it in the last fight against Cerrone, is what I'm saying. I think that when he fought Cerrone, he was at a new camp. He had taken a lot of time off because he wanted to recover. And he just didn't look like the same Robbie Lawler there. Now, that being said, Dos Anjos is fighting at welterweight. He's, I believe, now 3-0 at welterweight with wins over, who is it? It's Magny. And I don't remember who the other person is. My photographic memory is failing me. I used to have such a good photographic memory. You've got the tablet now. It's very smart.
Now
I should start bringing it in.
Saffredine, Magny, and Lawler.
Tarek Saffredine, that's right. But Dos Anjos hasn't looked this good in a while. He looked fantastic against Lawler, picked him apart. You saw that big combo, 28-strike combo.
I put it on my Instagram.
Yeah.
I put it on because I was upset. It actually stressed me out to see that. It was so great, but to me it showed immature striking because you have the leg hurt. You were smashing him with low kicks the whole time. The leg was hurt. He had no movement. He's backed up against the cage. Why are we headhunting? You're wasting all that energy. You take a quick pause and then kick the leg and then go back to the punches. That quick pause is going to let you attack that leg over and over. The leg is so open at that time. He's covering his head. Out of those 28, how many actually landed and did damage? Maybe 1, 2, or 3 of them. But if you would have paused, kicked that leg as hard as you can, that it was already damaged and that it was already hurting, and then you went back to the punches, I bet you he could have got a finish in that combination.
Yeah.
Instead, he wasted energy, and he did a good job at mixing levels, but he needed to mix in the kicks or the knees at that point if he wanted a true finish. So frustrating to me, but still an amazing combination.
Yeah, for sure. And I mean, when you look at it, you also think, you know, I'm going to win the round with something like this. Like,
yeah.
You know,
I didn't think he could sustain that pace. That's what worried me.
Right, yeah. Yeah, you slowed down, you know, over 5 rounds, for sure, if you're going at that sort of pace. But that being said, Robbie Lawler wasn't exactly picking the pace up as the fight went on.
Absolutely.
He looked like he was fading. But, you know, if you look back at Lawler versus Rory McDonald, That's when Lawler came on. It was in the late rounds.
He picked it up, yeah. I mean, he still always had a chance. Even I was explaining to my friends, one of my favorite Robbie Lawler fights is when he fought Melvin Manhoff in Strikeforce.
Yeah, back in the day.
He was getting his leg destroyed by Manhoff. Like, I mean, when he was Manhoff was hitting the inside leg kick and he was spinning Lawler around. One of the craziest low kicks in MMA that I've seen. One punch, he threw that counter overhand shot, knocked Manhoff right out. So, I mean, that's what I was thinking was going to happen if RDA got too excited, leaving his hands down, and Robbie threw that counter punch out of nowhere. We could have had another look at that, but I meant RDA, man, just so good. I love it.
It's like every time you watch him, he reminds you of how good he is.
And he's quite old himself too, right?
Yeah, he's no spring chicken.
No.
Now this probably puts him as the top contender at welterweight, especially with a performance of that caliber against a former champion. But you have a guy like Colby Covington waiting in the wings. You know, Colby said he was approached about being a coach on The Ultimate Fighter against Woodley. Apparently, Woodley's turned it down, but you never know. You know, if the money ends up being right, maybe that ends up coming together. And if that comes together, that means Covington's going to be next in line for a title shot. Do you think that's fair?
No, I think RDA gets it, in my eyes. I think Colby's getting it with his words and his mouth more than what he's done.
He did beat Demian Maia. Let's not diminish
that. I get that. But, I mean, before that, he was non-existent, really, in the division. I'm not as in-depth with you as UFC, but I didn't hear about him until that fight with Maia, and still he started coming out being more vocal, where we've known RDA for so long, three dominant. I mean, all of them were pretty dominant performances from RDA. So I like RDA, to be honest, over Colby.
I don't think there's any reason why RDA doesn't get the shot based on what he's accomplished.
Yeah.
But based on marketability, again, you're talking about a guy who's a former champion. Dos Anjos isn't a no-name in the sport.
Yeah.
And if you look at followers and following, Dos Anjos has a big following in Brazil. He's got more followers on social media. But Covington's making noise. He's barking.
It's the talking, right? And that's what MMA has turned into 2017.
Yeah.
And that's what I'm sure we'll see in 2018, is we're going to see a lot more people having to use their words to get fights. And Colby's the perfect person.
You know, the crazy thing about Colby is that Colby's position has kind of flipped on its head. You know, when he was calling for Maia and calling for these big fights, he says, "Oh, everybody's ducking me. Nobody wants a piece of me." Now everybody's calling him out.
Yeah.
And he's saying, "Oh, I'm hurt. I can't fight right now." Yeah. You know, Usman wanted a fight with him.
And Usman would be a fair good fight.
Yeah.
I feel Usman's not even getting a fair share in all the fights.
Yeah, Usman's
he seems like he's been pushed aside.
Now in St. Louis. Now it's not even on a pay-per-view.
Yeah, he needs a good fight. So, I mean, I think there's a lot of good fights for these guys, but someone like RDA, a past champion with a streak like he's doing now, I think he's legitimately the next contender in my eyes.
Well, welterweight's looking very different these days. You know, you've got Covington, who's now in the top three. You've got RDA, who's emerged as a contender. You've got Darren Till. You've got all these guys.
You still have the Wonder
Boys. Yeah,
Wonder Boy, who's always going to be a problem for anyone who fights him. So
yeah.
I think he's the toughest guy to fight in the division. So,
and now you've got Ponzinibbio also.
Yeah, Ponzinibbio looked awesome.
Yeah. That was a great fight.
Oh, yeah. That was great. It was exciting. Low kicks again. I mean, Ponzinibbio could have finished, I think, Perry if he would have kept going back to it. But I think Perry, like, even what I'm hearing and what I'm reading about that fight, everyone's still giving Mike Perry so much attention after. Mm-hmm. Even if he lost, it's like, what's next for Mike Perry?
Yeah, exactly.
But no one's really talking about what's next with Ponzinibbio. It's more of what's next for Mike Perry. So Mike Perry's done a good job, win or loss, to establish himself as a name. Like, I mean, he really didn't lose that fight.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, because of the good performance, the way he talks, and the fact that he can back it up.
He's not going to move down in the rankings. He wasn't ranked to begin with.
I think it's Ponzinibbio now. I think, or Mike Perry, one of them will even take fights at middleweight, they were saying.
Oh,
as
really?
Well. They're like, all right.
I don't know why Perry would fight in middleweight. He hates cutting the weight, but he doesn't cut a lot of weight.
No.
Which is the odd part about it. Yeah. Well, Ponzinibbio had a great year. He beat Gunnar Nelson and Mike Perry in the calendar year. That's no easy feat. So good on him. And I think the Josh Emmett-Lamas fight is interesting. You know, I looked at the rankings today, and everybody has Emmett as a top five featherweight now. But I don't think that's how it works. That shouldn't, just because you beat the guy who's ranked third,
I agree with
doesn't
you.
Mean that you're third now.
And especially since he missed weight, right?
Featherweight's a deep division. He missed weight. He had only had one featherweight fight prior to that in the UFC, which he had won. But if you go in and you beat Lamas, and he beat him in devastating fashion, don't get me wrong, it was a very impressive win. But if you don't make the weight, like, why are you bypassing an entire division? Like,
I don't agree with that.
You're now ahead of Duho Choi, you're ahead of Dennis Bermudez, you're ahead of Chang Sung Jung. You know,
but that's kind of what we saw with Justin Gaethje as well, right?
Yeah.
Because when he came in, he was undefeated with World Series of Fighting, but we never really saw where he was, and I think he ended up being ranked third or fourth in the division, and everyone's like, we haven't really seen enough of him in the UFC.
He was 1-3 in his last four.
Exactly.
Going into that fight.
So to rank him so high, and I mean, but I don't know. I just think that's a little too much of a jump for Josh Emmett. Yeah, he did great, but you missed weight. Should that officially go on? That should be one of the punishments. I know a lot of people are talking about the 20% purse deduction isn't enough. Well, you can take 30, you can take 40. What's going to hurt a guy more than maybe the financial reasons? Well, maybe tell them you're not going to move up the ranking now, or you know, something along the martial arts status, but it's hard.
Here's another thing, though. If guys are taking fights on 3 weeks' notice, 4 weeks' notice, change the weight class. Make it a catch weight.
Yeah.
Like, it doesn't need to, like, if let's say Lamas or Emmett wins the fight at 150 pounds, nobody's going to say, oh, that fight doesn't count as a featherweight fight. It's still, like, just, it still affects the hierarchy of featherweight. And then you saw also on this card, Pietro Mengo was supposed to fight Tim Elliott, doesn't make weight.
Yeah.
Tim Elliott says, I'm not going to fight this guy. Why am I going to, he gets 20% of his purse. He goes, I get 20% of his purse. His purse is $10,000. I'm going to get $2,000
to take
the damage and fight this guy when I can just get my win money, like I can get my show money. I'll just take the show money
and then
fight
book
another
fight after.
Yeah.
I think
Which
he's booked on the next card as well.
Yeah,
because I'm friends with James Krause, and I think he was saying
they're buddies.
They booked
it. And they trained together.
Yeah.
But he just got booked actually against Mike De La Rosa for UFC 219, I believe.
Is it early January?
No, it's in 2 weeks.
So the 2 week one,
coming up, yeah.
Okay.
So and De La Rosa, his wife was just on the last season of The Ultimate Fighter, Montana Stewart. So welcome to the UFC, Mike De La Rosa.
Yeah, that'd be nice.
Should be good. Good to see. So the Emmett Lamas thing. Now Emmett automatically is in the mix, it looks like, and that's, you know, good for him. Lamas now, I think, is probably going to be a gatekeeper from here on out. Which means that, you know, younger guys are going to either be able to move up if they fight him or get knocked out.
You don't think he has a chance to make another run?
Well, here's the problem. When you look at 145 and you look at the champion, it's Max Holloway. Holloway's beaten Lamas.
Yeah.
So in order to get a title fight, you really need to rail off a good winning streak if you've lost to that champion before.
Yeah.
And I think that's
it's a stacked division, right?
It's a stacked division.
He's going to have to go through three or four.
There's a lot of guys moving up.
He's not too young anymore.
Now.
I think he's, what, 35?
Yeah, he's up there.
Yeah, he's up there in his 30s. So, yeah.
And he's been around since the WBC days. So, yeah, I mean, guys like Emmett now create more of a firestorm around them. And you look at the rankings, you know, the next fight for Holloway is going to be Edgar. And then you see Brian Ortega's nipping right at the heels there, too. And especially with Lamas losing now and Ortega beating Swanson. You know, a month ago, the guys at the top were Lamas,
there's three, four solid guys.
And now those two guys are out, and Ortega's in there, and then anybody else's guess, you know, we'll see what happens. Emmett probably needs another win, and then he can be right in the mix. And he's a Team Alpha Male guy, comes from a good camp, looked really good against Lamas. So, you know, good for him. It's nice to see him get that win. Obviously, losing or missing the weight is not a good look. So we'll see what happens in his next fight. Again, taking the fight on short notice probably had something to do with that. Glover Teixeira defeats Misha Zhurkhanov. Now, a lot of people afterwards I saw on Twitter were saying that they think Zhurkhanov needs to train at a better camp. In fact, Glover told Robin Black after the fight that he would love to have Misha come down to Connecticut and train with him after he beat him, which is a very gracious thing to do. Do you agree with that? Do you think that it's hard to get to that upper echelon if you're not coming from a camp where you're competing in the camp against guys that are at or above your level?
Well, I mean, I think it depends on a lot of things. And I think with Misha, the first thing I want to give him positives on is striking looked really good. It looked more relaxed. It looked a little bit more patient. And again, in his last fight against Ozdemir, he got overly aggressive with his striking, which was something that he improved on this fight. You saw him stay relaxed. He was out striking Glover. He was mixing in kicks really nicely. Like, I mean, so there's definitely been improvements in his striking. But I think with Misha, and I've invited him out to my camp and my gym multiple times. I think he's comfortable with the team and the people he has. So I think that's where he likes his comfortable training environment. But I do agree. I think Misha does need to get out of his comfort zone a little bit. I thought his wrestling and his ground game was light years away from everyone. So that's why I was like, at one point we were going to get him to come and we're trying. I'm still in the works. Again, I have a 185er, Rob Thomas, who'd be perfect training partners with Misha. Those guys would be amazing. They've sparred together in the past. So, I mean, hopefully he starts seeing that he needs these types of things. I mean, Bazooka Kickboxing is obviously open for him, but
open for all.
That's it.
If you want a membership, it's on the website.
But, I mean, yeah, I think Misha would benefit from mixing in with bigger guys. It's so hard as a big guy like Misha to get good big body training partners. I think either if he has his home camp here at Extreme Couture, it's nice for him to go to maybe little camps here and there. He doesn't have to do full camp changes. I mean, it's nice to go for a week and get some big bodies of wrestling, some good striking a week here and there, and then build a good camp locally. I think he can do it, but I think little changes for Misha could go a long way for him. And I mean, I know even in his coaching, his corner, all of that could be a little bit better, but you can't really take anything away from him. Look how successful his career has been, and he's in the top of the division. He's just having that hard time cracking those top few. Like, he was 4-0 before into the UFC, and he's only lost his last two against, you know, top contenders in the division. So I don't want to write Misha off yet. I just think he's still learning and developing.
Yeah, and meanwhile, Glover Teixeira is training in a garage in Connecticut. Nobody brings that up.
Yeah.
By himself, pretty much.
Yeah, and he's what, 40 years old, 38?
Yeah, limited training partner. So, you know, there are a lot of guys. Like, look at Stipe Miocic. Trains in Cleveland.
That's what he says.
With like nobody.
Homegrown team. His team's been together since they were young. But I think they do get, I'm sure they have big guys in training.
Yeah, they bring guys in. They often bring people in to train with Stipe. But at the same time, it's no different
nice homegrown
from what Misha's
doing. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And I mean, Misha, I was really surprised because Misha's, you know, ground and grappling and wrestling is, I can't see it. It's probably better than Glover's if you look at it on paper. So, I don't know. I just hope Misha stays positive, and which I'm sure he will, and continue to work. And, again, maybe I'll reach out to him more and say, hey, let's get some more training together. Maybe we'll help your stand-up a little bit more. But he's a perfect local, close guy that I think we can make some big leaps and changes with. So, and I know a lot of his friends train with me as well. So, good opportunity. Hopefully he'll come.
And, you know, the four other Canadians on the card, all looked fantastic.
And it was all in the beginning of the night, too.
Yeah. Did you see Jordan Meehan's fight? That was on Fight Pass.
I did. I caught...
That was shades of the old Jordan Meehan. He looked really good, really comfortable. He was... You know, the thing you never want to do against Eric Silva, at least the Eric Silva pre-USADA, is try to really
get over-aggressive. Yeah.
Yeah. Like, if you advance against him, he's going to usually catch you. Jordan Meehan was advancing. Jordan Meehan was, and that's when Jordan Meehan's at his best, is when he's advancing. And I thought that he was very aggressive against an aggressive fighter, and that it worked well for him, because I don't think that Eric Silva knew what to do. It was like when Matt Brown fought Eric Silva. Like, it seemed Eric Silva was like, okay, this guy's like not afraid of me at all.
Yeah, and he just kept coming forward. Yeah. But I read that Jordan said he wasn't overly aggressive. He said he held it back because of his recent losses.
Yeah, I don't know if I agree with that.
That's what I was saying, because he looked good. He looked like he kept coming forward. He was mixing up his strikes really well. Like, and we saw some of his old elbows we saw in the past, because his elbows are vicious.
He just looked bigger and better everywhere.
Yeah, I think that time off, and I think Jordan Meehan is one of these examples of someone who got thrown into professional fighting so early that he didn't really have a chance to enjoy and appreciate what was going on, because he wanted to retire like 2 years ago, 3 years ago.
Someone brought this up on Twitter.
And he was still so young when he was doing it. He was just too young, being so successful in his career, that this little gap off was probably really positive for him.
Mm-hmm. Someone brought up on Twitter his first fight ever. You can find it on YouTube. It's him versus Rory McDonald. They're both 16.
Oh, yeah, babies. Yeah, that's what I'm saying. It's such a young career that they burn out.
He's age 28.
You
got to
think, you burn out. So, I mean, the 2-3 years off, maybe he needed those losses to get time away from the sport for him to really appreciate and to understand what it takes and the mental ability. I know tons of kids who've started when they were young and they're burnt out.
Yeah.
So, I mean, now it's the time. I mean, if he's ready, he can make a real good run at it again.
Mm-hmm. The Duke Rufus trained John McDessie. Looked very good.
I think he looked
Abel
okay.
Trujillo.
I think he looked okay. I wasn't
He looked good, or that Trujillo just did not look good. Trujillo had one corner man. Do you notice that?
No.
He had Carrington Banks in his corner, and that's it. Well, he was one of the guys from the Black Zillions, and Black Zillions split into two. Most guys went with Henry Hoof at Combat Club, and then there's this other kind of faction of
that stayed in between, or
that just kind of started their own gym.
I thought Trujillo went to...
No, he didn't go to Combat Club. So he just has Carrington Banks.
Hard Knocks. Isn't it called Hard Knocks? Henry Hoof's is called Hard Knocks 365.
Hard Knocks 365. Yeah. So, he looked good. Like, MacDessie looked very good, but Trujillo, I don't know, wasn't as aggressive as he usually is. Nordin Taleb looked fantastic on the other
great.
Hand.
Oh, great. And they gave him the performance bonus,
yeah,
which was nice.
Yeah.
Yeah, he went on the mic calling that he wanted it, but that head kick was beautiful. Yeah. Then set up. Beautiful punch. Well done. I like Nordin.
He's good.
I like the fact that he likes his low kicks. And a guy who values low kicking already wins my heart, obviously. So he's good. He's powerful. And he's another guy that I was hoping to train with, hopefully, one day in our career. Like, we're so close to each other. He was another guy I think my style would work well with.
He's a guy that's just improved so much since his time on The Ultimate Fighter, on both two seasons of The Ultimate Fighter, actually.
And I didn't think he was as old as he was. Like, I mean, this is a thing for me, like, especially on this card. Guys that, for some reason, I paid attention to ages on this UFC, and I realized these guys are a lot older than I expected.
I think 34, 35.
Yeah. So, I mean, I didn't expect these guys, to be doing so well at this age. So, I mean, it's just showing that, you know, you can go into this age. And especially now, I think the time changed. When UFC first started, it was a lot of older, men fighting in it. And I think now the change is all these younger kids are going into it, and you're still seeing a little bit of guys in their 30s staying in. But there's a big whack of guys in their mid-30s that are still competing at the highest level. So Nordin still has some potential in time,
absolutely.
It seems.
And the guy that you chose for your pick, Chad Laprise, against Galor Profondo.
Early scare.
You know, I was thinking of taking Chad for this very reason. I thought if this fight went to the ground, like, Galor was going to be in a world of hurt. And, Chad took a shot, like you mentioned, in the first round, early on in the first round, got knocked down, and then just came to, no problem, was able to turn it around.
Yeah, that style, Bofondo's style was just so weird. He was moving his hands. He was doing that half karate, half capoeira looking style, and it was awkward. And I know Laprise had trouble with it at first. I mean, anytime you fight someone like that, it's going to be that initial trouble to find the timing, the rhythm, and the control of the cage. But once Laprise had it in the takedown, we knew it was over.
Yeah, so your pick was... was
straight
Laprise,
up Laprise.
Straight up Laprise. You went up $7.50 on a $10 bet, and I lost my wager, which was for Mike Perry against Ponzinibbio. It looked good in the first round, and then it turned it around. So you've got $84.50. I've got $79, and we have UFC 219 odds. Do you know who you want to take?
I'll pick something. You gonna make your pick now? Oh, it's not on here.
I can make my pick now. I've been on the fence. I'll tell you what I was gonna pick. After you make your pick. But
These are the only ones that are on right now?
Yeah, that's all we have. We don't have a full card yet, just the main card. And I'm going to go with Carla Esparza at +265 against Cynthia Calvillo. The reason I just, when I saw this line, I just thought that the odds were way too too long for someone who's a former champion, who's probably the best or second best wrestler, maybe behind Tatiana Suarez in the strawweight division, against someone who's relatively untested in Calvillo. You know, Calvillo's been considered this young prospect, but she's already 30 years old. She's won 4 times this year, so she has a chance to win 5 times in 1 calendar year, which is pretty impressive. But I just think she might be in over her head with Esparza here, and especially with those odds, I'm gonna go with Esparza.
Okay, I think I'm gonna do a parlay because there's lot of big favorite odds. I'm gonna go Nurmagomedov. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think his wrestling's gonna be too much for Barboza, and I'm gonna go with Carlos Condit.
All right,
I haven't seen my boy Carlos in a bit, but I like those two.
So my other pick was gonna be actually Cyborg and Khabib. So your parlay should give you probably, I'd say, about plus 150. No, it'll be above even. Just a bit above even. We'll work it out afterwards, and we'll see where we're at. But so my pick is Carla Esparza. Yours is a Carlos Condit and Khabib parlay.
Yeah. I think Condit will win a good decision. He's going to win a nice unanimous decision.
Awesome. All right, so we've got that figured out for now, and let's look ahead to UFC 219. We just made our picks for that particular card. But it's an interesting card because if you look at the main card, you've got, again, what we discussed earlier in the show, what might be the highest profile women's fight of all time with Cyborg versus Holly Holm. You tend to think that Holm has a chance. I think she's in tough on this in this particular fight.
Do you see it a decision or are we getting a finish?
No, I think we'll get a finish. I think we'll see Cyborg get a finish at some point.
Really?
Yeah. But I just think that the size discrepancy is going to play a factor. I think that when you look at striking as a whole, that Holm is a fantastic striker, no doubt. But I think Cyborg just has a little bit more diversity that she's going to be able to bring to the table here. I think it's a close fight. Like, the odds are about where I thought they would be.
Yeah.
Which is Cyborg nearly a 4-1 favorite.
I don't know. I think Holly Holm, from my understanding, she cuts a little bit of weight too. So if she just keeps that little bit of size on, she's tall, she's got that range, I think she's got a fair chance. I really do think she has a fair chance. And especially since Cyborg's going to keep it standing, we know it. So I think she's got a good chance. But obviously, I think Cyborg's the big favorite, but I'm not counting Holly out. That's what I'm saying.
Yeah, so we're going to go to, actually, when you look at Cyborg and Khabib, these are two fighters that, at least in the UFC, and probably for a long time, if you date back to Cyborg a long time ago, haven't really lost a round. Khabib's never lost a round in the UFC.
No, he just dominates.
So, yeah, it's just two of the most dominant fighters in the UFC doing their thing. So I want to look at Barboza versus Khabib. Now, I was trying to just pull up Barboza's stats, because I want to see how good his takedown defense is, but for some reason it's not allowing me at the moment.
They have his takedown defense at 86.79%.
Okay, there you go. So that's really going to be the key here, because on the feet, I think that Barboza is better than anybody in the division, save for maybe, you know, a guy like Connor. Although, you know, Barboza, I mean, I think Barboza is probably a better striker than Connor, just with a far worse chin.
Yeah, and I think Barboza is just a little bit more wild striking compared to, like, someone like Connor. Barboza will throw more wild. He'll take more risks.
And wild turns into the takedowns.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Yeah, if you overcommit to something, that's a problem. So I think, yes, his striking, but I think his type of striking plays into a wrestler's advantage, because Barboza is going to throw those long kicks. He's going to throw those, you know, combinations that are a little bit more seen, or he overthrows them and it's going to put him in trouble. That's why I really like Khabib in this one.
I like the fact that it's a three-round fight for Khabib. I think in three rounds, the chances of Khabib winning two of those rounds are very high.
Yeah, I agree.
Like, I think that, like, if you just look at it from a probability standpoint, unless Barboza is able to take him out, and nobody's really been able to take Khabib out. I mean, Michael Johnson dropped him in the first round of their fight last year in November, but I just think that unless Barboza has some sort of I wouldn't say gets lucky with a strike, but is able to have a lot of success standing, that there's just no shot for him to win this fight.
No, he's got to throw those unorthodox. He's got to get his knees ready. He needs uppercuts ready. He can't just sit there and kind of, you know, throw his traditional type of strike. It's going to slow him down. It's 100% as a good striker. If you're fighting Khabib, you're going to be slowed down because you're scared. So I think that's going to really limit Barboza, but his timing with his uppercut and maybe his knees are going to have to be his best weapon.
Well, I mean, the good thing about Barboza is that he's just with such a good camp, with good strategists. You know, he trains with Mark Henry, along with Frankie Edgar and Eddie Alvarez. And if you look at Alvarez's strategy against Gaethje, if you look at Edgar's strategy against Yair Rodriguez, like, these guys know how to maximize the assets of their fighters. And I think that if Barboza comes prepared for this fight and has a really sound game plan, it could be a long night for Khabib.
I just think it's one of those things where it's like, you can prepare yourself for takedown defense every day, but you're talking about one of the best, right? I mean, no matter how much you prepare your takedown defense, your jiu-jitsu, you're talking about one of the best in MMA, one of the best wrestlers ever.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I think no matter how much you prepare for it, that's all Khabib.
Yeah, so I think, you know, the other thing I've been hearing with Khabib is, I heard one person say he's working with a dietitian, he's trimming down, and then I heard another account that said he still has 30 pounds to cut.
Yeah, I've heard both as well, so I don't know.
Let's see what happens.
That kidney failure can't be good,
No.
I know they're even questioning. I think he really wants a shot at the belt, right? He wants the lightweight belt, but I think we're going to see him as a welterweight probably. I think
for your health. Kevin Lee's been trying to lobby for like a 165 and one, you know, the addition of a 165 and 175 pound division, get rid of 170 and just do 165, 175. But I don't think that's going to be happening.
No, anytime soon. But I just think he has to. And I from my understanding, from his coaches and his teams, he wants the belt at 155, and once he has the belt, he's ready to go to welterweight.
Really?
That's what they were saying. So we'll see if that's true.
Well, the belt is kind of on hold right now at lightweight, unfortunately.
Yeah, so he's going to have to keep waiting.
Who knows what's happening with
Connor? Yeah, so I mean, I just think he'll be a threat in any division. I don't think he needs to go to 155 for his wrestling to be a threat. I think he can do just as much damage at 170.
Sure, if not more, because it'll be faster.
Absolutely. So
he'll have to take bigger strikes, though.
I think he doesn't want to climb the ranks in the welterweight division, because if he jumps now, he has to do all that climbing again.
Well, not necessarily, because if you take him and you put him up against a top guy like a Colby Covington or a
which
Dos
I think
Anjos.
He beats.
Yeah,
I think he
Dos
beats
Anjos,
probably.
Who he's already beaten.
Yeah, exactly.
So suddenly now he goes in and fights Dos Anjos and wins. He's the number one contender. That's
true.
It. That's how the rankings.
Because I think the only
today.
Guy that can probably give him problems. How would you think he would do with Wonder Boy? Do you think he can handle that style? Probably.
Yeah, probably.
I think maybe Woodley would be his toughest.
Woodley probably
would be
the toughest
because they can match the size, the wrestling.
Yeah.
Woodley's got the explosiveness advantage. So I think, I think he could easily be a two-division champion if he's able to do it.
And then you've got Jimmy Rivera and John Lineker. This is a fight I love because it's going to really answer a lot of questions at bantamweight. Could even end up being a top contenders fight. We'll have to see.
Lineker's a quick turnover, isn't it?
Lineker hadn't fought at all in 2017 and then recently fought
in October.
Won his fight. Yeah. So he's got he's going to be facing Jimmy Rivera. Jimmy Rivera has just been on a tear, beating the best of the best in the division. So this really, to me, is just going to be answer a lot of questions as to what's going on in that division. Now, if Lineker wins, the problem is that TJ Dillashaw has beaten him already.
It's one of those,
so,
for sure.
You know, and he's also beaten Cody Garbrandt, so it opens up the division for a lot of other guys. But, you know, again, if Lineker wins, the top three guys behind Dillashaw will all be guys that he's beaten.
It would be him.
It would be Sun Tsao, and it would be Garbrandt. And then a guy like Marlon Moraes starts to move up and get a. I think he's probably one fight away or could
Absolutely.
Be next in line. He looked tremendous against Aljamain Sterling and against John Dodson.
Yeah, no, I think he's definitely up there. But the division's unreal. I think the 135 division is
starting to really beef
it's
up.
Really starting to beefing up. I just think Dillashaw. I'm still waiting for the Dillashaw and Demetrius Johnson.
That's,
I think
that's
the fight.
To look for.
I think that's the fight that needs to happen in a division.
Yeah.
These guys can keep fighting their ways, but let's have a nice fight with DJ and TJ.
See if somebody can see if TJ.
Apparently,
can win
TJ says he can
champions.
Go down and he's already working on it.
Yeah.
I know.
Told me personally, he's been able to walk around at 140 before, and then it's an easy cut to 135.
And they're doing good. They brought in a K1 Japanese fighter right now at Dwayne Ludwig, so they're getting a lot of good kickboxing work with one of the top Japanese prospects.
What's his name?
I can't even. I can't tell you. But the kid is good. He's not a glory guy, but he's one of those in the K1 Japan circuits
right.
that we don't really know what happens over there. But the kid's talented. Apparently, this kid is the next big thing to come
from
Japanese
Japan.
Kickboxing. So he's cool. He's in Denver right now training with Dwayne and Dillashaw. Yeah, look into him. He's good.
And then you've got Calvillo versus Esparza. I kind of gave you my opinion on that fight. I just think Esparza's wrestling is really her and Tatiana Suarez as strawweight are the cream of the crop when it comes to wrestling. And if Calvillo doesn't have an answer for that, it could be a long night for her. You know, Esparza had some losses recently, but a lot of it came from just, you know, she was having some problems outside of the cage. And I thought her loss to Randa Marcos, it was a very close fight. So we'll have to see how that goes. I don't know. It'll really be a good test as to see where Calvillo's wrestling is at. Now, I just think her being a more than 3-1 favorite in this fight is crazy.
Yeah, I think Carla Esparza was just so dominant when she first came in on the house, and then she just had that fall. Like, what was her actual problem outside of the ring? Do we know?
Apparently, she was having depression problem, like issues with depression and anxiety.
Seems to be a popular theme these days.
Yeah, and that was after losing to Ioana Jędrzejczyk and subsequently losing the title that she had not been able to defend. So we'll see what happens in that fight. But if Esparza's on point, I just think that she has a good shot of winning this fight.
Absolutely. I think she can beat anyone when she's on her game.
And then we've got Condit versus Neil Magny. Now, this is an interesting fight because Magny is the type of guy that will just throw a lot of interesting things your way that you'll have to respond to. Now, he lost to Dos Anjos in a pretty dominant fashion, but then when you saw what Dos Anjos brought to the table this past weekend,
you know
then,
that it's not that bad.
Yeah.
No, Magny's very difficult to beat, very rangy, very awkward style, very hard to get past his reach. I just think Condit is just as big, just as tall, just as rangy, and I think he can shut that range and length down, and that experience is going to be... They're both experienced guys, but I just think Carlos has that little bit of fighter's edge to him that'll give him the victory.
Yeah, this is a great match for Condit to make his comeback. You know, he took some time off. He was thinking about retirement. Now he's back. Neil Magny, just seems like a good fit because, you know, Magny's coming off of a loss, but is also a tricky opponent, the guy that a lot of people hold in high regard.
Oh, yeah, Magny's, anytime you fight a tall, lean, rangy guy, it's a very difficult fight. It's just they tend to have these strong bones to them that make them very dangerous. They got sharp shins, sharp elbows, and, like, it's just very long and awkward, and he's got that weird style. So, and Condit could be in a lot of trouble if he wants to stand at range, and Magny can give him a lot of problems. So I think Condit's going to have to fight the right fight to beat it. It's not going to be easy, but yeah. I like Condit.
The preliminary card unfortunately took a big hit because it was supposed to be Roundtree versus Gokhan Saki.
Yep.
And then when you look at the other fights, really the only one that sticks out to me as being a really good preliminary card fight is Dan Hooker versus Diakhizi. And now they just added the Tim Elliott fight, so that's a pretty good fight as well.
Miles Jury and Rick Glenn doesn't seem too bad.
Yeah, that's not bad actually.
That could be a good fight.
What Rick Glenn did to Gavin Tucker showed that he's making a lot of strides, and Miles Jury struggled at featherweight, so we'll have to see how if he can pull it back together and start getting back to his winning ways. He was considered one of these prospects that was going to make
He was doing really well. Yeah. I mean, he still has a 16-2 record, not bad at all.
Yeah, absolutely.
So very impressive. I'm not sure who his losses.
He took some time off.
Well, his losses were to Cerrone and Charles Oliveira, so I mean,
those are high-level opponents.
Yeah, so I mean, he's up there definitely, so hopefully we see him back. I actually thought he was Canadian.
No, Miles the Fury Jury.
Okay. I thought he was from out west.
No, I don't. No, he's definitely not Canadian. But Rick Glenn is good at beating Canadians, as he just beat Gavin Tucker. So
yeah,
we'll see what Rick Glenn brings to the table. Former champion for the World Series of Fighting.
It looks like Rick Gavin Tucker's healing up pretty good. I follow him on Instagram, so hopefully we'll see him back.
I'd like to see him back next year and see what he can do. He was, you know, such a coveted Canadian prospect, and that brings us to a topic I wanted to touch on earlier, which is with Misha losing. Who's the next Canadian guy that's going to step up? I look at a lot of the Canadian talent in the UFC, and there doesn't really seem to be a guy that or girl that's going to be able to do what George St. Pierre is doing. Now, you look at Alexis Davis. She just won at flyweight, and she's considered a top five flyweight now, but that doesn't mean a whole lot. To me, I think Jeremy Kennedy and Arjun Buller are the two that we should keep our eyes on. You know,
yeah,
wrestling
we need to see a little bit more from Arjun first, because he's only had one UFC fight, so I think a little bit more from him.
But I think it's time that we start looking ahead to these kind of guys that don't have a lot of UFC experience yet that we have to start hanging our hat on these guys, because we've seen what a lot of the other Canadians can do.
Yeah, we've had a lot of guys that just had a trouble cracking. Like, I mean, especially from the kickboxing community itself, we've seen a lot of guys who just had trouble. We had Shane Campbell, Jesse Ronson. We saw
TKO champions.
We saw all of them. Yeah, we said there's so many different guys that's come through. Alex Ricci, just not having the time. I thought Gavin Tucker could still potentially be a big threat. I think once he, you know, comes back from this loss and he stays mentally strong, I like Gavin Tucker. But you're right. I think Arjun is going to be a good, tough guy to beat. But yeah, you're right. I think Misha was the highest ranked Canadian, and now this puts the Canadian market right up there. I don't know. You're right.
Sure. Well, let's go to some topics, some news headlines. GSP's coach, Faraz Zahabi, he was down in Winnipeg, spoke to Robin Black, said that GSP will return for whatever the most interesting epic fight is. So no interest in fighting a middleweight again, I don't think, unless there's an interesting epic fight there. And two names that Faraz mentioned were McGregor and Mayweather.
Yeah, telling you. This is not a surprise to me. I think a lot of people were trying to pretend. We knew this was going to happen.
GSP
deep inside,
versus Mayweather, that can't happen.
No, but GSP wanted one fight before Conor. I think we all kind of knew it. I felt it.
Well, he wanted Conor probably, but Conor had other plans.
Yeah. I think now, what's the talk? Still the Pacquiao and Conor McGregor now talks?
Come on.
Is that still going on?
No, it's not going to happen. You think that Dana White's going to sit in a room with Bob Arum and negotiate that?
No, he said something. He's like, I will sue Manny Pacquiao if you even try. But I don't know. It's all up there for Conor.
No, he said he'll sue Pacquiao's representatives, aka Bob Arum. He wouldn't mention him by name. But,
okay.
Yeah.
But I mean, man, what could Conor do? I think he's got to come back to the UFC, and I've heard he wants to, but we haven't heard anything.
Yeah.
GSP is just going to wait? Or?
He was just on TMZ last week, and he said, my next fight's going to be a real fight, MMA, not boxing.
Okay.
So if that's the case, you know, and Dana White says we might not see Conor till next summer, that's a long time for Tony Ferguson to sit around. He's only fought once. Like, hell, I've only fought once in, like, 2 years, pretty much, if he waits until summer.
Firm, yeah.
And Ferguson's a guy that likes to stay busy, so. But at the same time, from a business standpoint, it would be silly to take another fight.
Yeah, it doesn't make any sense. And we keep saying that every time, but Connor's in control.
Yeah, Connor's
we can't
in control.
Do anything. Connor's
and if
controlling
Connor
it.
Connor says, I want Georges St-Pierre. Nobody's saying no.
No, which I can see happening.
Yeah,
because it'll give him the best payday. It'll make him the most money, and it'll be a fight that he'd want to take and come back and sell and build. I think it's the perfect fight. I wouldn't be surprised if you can look back at all the secret conversations. Like, I'm sure Connor's management with Firas all had a talk. Hey, you win this fight, build your name, and then it seems like it's been planned from before. So, I mean, I would love to see GSP and McGregor. Why not?
Yeah, let's make it happen.
Yeah, sure.
The biggest fight you can make in MMA right
Absolutely.
Now.
Absolutely, easily. So, I mean, why would both of these guys want to come back for any other reason?
Yeah,
let's make some donuts.
Exactly. So we'll see how that goes. I mean, that could be an interesting year ahead of us once again in this crazy sport. Robert Fallis, sad news, unfortunately, has passed away at the age of 48. The history with Robert Fallis is he was a guy that was part of the Team Quest out in Oregon,
mm-hmm.
and was one of the pioneers of MMA as a coach. Was never really a guy that trained that much in the sport or competed in the sport, but had a really sharp mind for the sport. Apparently was a sponge, would read everything, would go to seminars.
Write
notes, spend night and day fixated and focused on the sport of MMA. And last month, him and Extreme Couture parted ways, and he said he was looking for other coaching opportunities. We're going to start something new in Las Vegas. And unfortunately, gone too soon. Robert Fallis. Did you ever meet Robert
Fallis? No, I never met him. But I mean, I'm just from hearing all the stories and knowing guys that he's coached, I know he's had a large impact on everyone. It's just, I think it's a good time now for people just to raise awareness for depression. And I've personally posted things online about depression. And a lot of people are just like, oh, it's just this. And people don't look at depression as a serious mental illness. And I think this is just a good opportunity for people to understand that it's a real thing. Someone can come off so happy. Happy, positive, and you have no idea what's going inside on anyone. And I think it's just a good opportunity. And I'll continually bring back to concussions and brain injury in the sport, because part of me wants to make sure everybody's safe getting out of the sport. With concussions, with fighting, comes the brain injuries. With brain injuries comes depression. It's something you can't control. If you listen back to my Joe Rogan experience, I fully came out and talking about how the depression got so much into me. And there's times, man, it totally changes who you are as a person. It wasn't me. When I was in that depressed state and I was dealing with the brain injuries and the concussions, I was not the same person I am now. So, I mean, I just think we need to be a little bit more sensitive to the issue, and hopefully people will start seeking out help. I grew up in an old school Italian household where, you know, maybe you don't talk about your feelings as much. You don't open up about things that are bothering you, but these things help. It's 2017. It's okay to go see a therapist now. It's okay to go get help. It's okay to open up about your feelings and emotions. So hopefully this brings a lot of light to depression and gets people really in the right direction on how to solve it and deal with it.
You know, I was lucky enough to work with Michael Landsberg for 4 of my 6 years here at TSN, and Michael is one of the biggest advocates for mental health in Canada, and you know, has really helped out with Bell Let's Talk and those kind of initiatives. And there would be times, I don't know if he would want me to tell him the story, but I'm going to tell it anyways. So there would be times where I'd be sitting at my desk and Michael would be at his office that was behind my desk. He'd be on the phone talking to somebody, and he'd be like, okay, tell me how you're feeling, and all of these things. And he'd be on the phone for like 25, 30 minutes. And get off the phone, I'd go into his office, I go, who was that? He goes, I don't know. He goes, it was just someone who called, who needed someone to talk to.
Just needed someone. Yeah. Beautiful.
Yeah, and that's...
That's all it is sometimes.
And that's what Michael would do that 2 or 3 times a week.
That's awesome,
it would just
Michael.
Be people would call him, and he would never say, I'm busy. You know, he would always find the time to talk to people that were going through some things. So, you know, and I'm happy to work for this company, Bell, because, you know, Bell Let's Talk Day has been able to raise such awareness for what people are going through, even if it's one day a year where you just strictly talk about and give money to mental health causes. I think it makes a big difference.
Oh, absolutely. And me being a special education teacher in Toronto, I've seen so many people that could have used help. And, you know, there's a lot of things. Life's not easy. Life is not easy. And this is one of the reasons why I feel martial arts a great skill to have, because it teaches you that when you're down, when you're tired, when you might beat up, you got to get up. You got to keep going. So that mindset of martial arts does transfer over in real life. Or sometimes if I'm having a bad day, I'll be like, no, you know what? if I could go in and if I'm down, I can get better. I can, you know, force myself. I've done that every single time. For example, I break my arm in my concussion. Doctor will tell me one thing. Instead of most people sitting there being like, oh, it's okay. Yeah, I might not be able to do this. I always had that fighter's mentality where I got to keep going. I got to get better. So, I mean, I think it's just if people don't have that outlet or that way of getting out there, I mean, there's got to be someone you can talk to. It's just hard, man.
And your dream was to be a world kickboxing champion.
Absolutely. And then I was told, yeah.
And then you were depressed after you achieved
absolutely
being at the top of the mountain.
Being at the top of the mountain, right, then you get depressed. Yeah, yeah, I was like, I wanted my whole waited my whole life for this, and then boom, yeah, depression
Robert
hit.
Paulus, and it's like, coached Misha Tate to a championship. Just took Kevin Lee to an interim championship.
And I was hearing that his brother passed away 2 years ago. He was having trouble dealing with it, and I mean, it's real, man. Depression, mental health issues, it's real. I mean, even when I get frustrated when people you see homeless people on the street, and the first thing people say, oh, you know, go get a job. I'm not giving you any money. It's like, no, they don't want to be there. Yeah. A lot of times they're dealing with bipolar, they're schizophrenic, they're dealing with mental health issues that don't allow them to have these things. So, I mean, let's just work with people, especially at this time of the year. It's nice to give and just ask someone how they're really doing. 99% of the time you ask someone how they're doing, they're going to say good, even if they're having the worst day of their life, because it's just a thing we do. But sometimes it's nice to be like, call someone out of the blue, or just really genuinely ask that person if they want to talk.
Yeah, and if you're out there and you have a Twitter account or Facebook account, feel free to reach out to someone
absolutely
like Joe
absolutely,
or like Michael Landsberg or Mauro Ranallo, people that
have
been open
Mauro's
about
very big.
Health, yeah.
Mauro has bipolar, and he's very open about it, and you know, he's suffered a lot of things, so yeah, he's a perfect person to hit up on that.
All right, well, no easy way to segue out of that, but again, thank you to Robert Falls for all of his contributions to the sport of mixed martial arts, and he'll be very missed. You know, everybody who had encountered him, you never heard anybody say a bad word about him.
Not one thing I've heard.
He was an athlete's first guy. He didn't want to take the shine away from his athletes when they won, and that's just the kind of guy he was. So rest in peace, Robert Falls. We're now going to go to our interview for this week. UFC 221 is going to be taking place in Perth, Australia, and recently announced going into the... Mark Hunt's from New Zealand, but going into Australia to fight Mark Hunt, who's very popular in Australia, is Curtis Blaydes. Fights at 265 pounds, one of the bigger heavyweights in the division, against another guy who fights at 265
another
pounds.
Big
so,
boy.
Yeah, it should be an interesting fight. And we're lucky enough to be joined now by Curtis Blaydes.
Ladies and gentlemen, it's time to introduce this week's guest.
Pleased to be joined now by the man they call Razor Blaydes. Curtis Blaydes joins us on the TSN MMA show. Curtis has pretty much won four in a row. One of them was overturned for what I consider to be a pretty silly reason. I don't know if you would agree with me on that, Curtis.
I mean, I have mixed emotions about that no contest, because I feel like I did pass the USADA drug test, but holy crap, but I didn't pass the Texas drug test. So I know I broke the rules, but it still feels like a weird way to rules of fight.
Well, yeah, the Texas Commission has a very strict rule. I think it has to be 0.0 for marijuana metabolites, just think along those lines, 0.1, and they're very strict about that, strangely.
Yeah, I learned that the hard way.
Yeah. Well, I still consider it four straight, which would put you up there with anybody else in the heavyweight division. I know Francis Ngannou, who you debuted against, has won five in a row. But the big news with you is this week it was announced that you're going to be fighting Mark Hunt at UFC 221, I believe it is. Yeah, UFC 221 in Perth, Australia this February. Why Mark Hunt? Why do you think that's a favorable matchup for you?
I mean, I wanted to fight someone ranked above me, and everyone else is pretty much already locked up, and I didn't want to have to wait until like May or June. So I kind of was the only one who was available. He's been tired of me. It's going to work out. That's what I want.
Yeah, you wanted a higher-ranked opponent. I know Ty Burrow was on your mind, but he's got somebody coming up. And I'm not even sure he's higher-ranked than you anymore. But you know what? Looking through the rankings, there are some odd some people who have submitted some odd rankings, in my opinion, where Andrei Arlovsky is ranked above you. There's even somebody who has Todd Duffy ranked above you. What do you think of the ranking systems and where you're ranked? Are you satisfied with how you're ranked right now?
I mean, I'm with the rankings because rankings – they mean a little, but they're not everything. A lot of fans, they fall in love with names. They fall in love with the history and what a guy did, and instead of what he's doing right now. I mean, Andrei Arlovsky is a a legend. He's a great fighter. He's in a name in MMA, doing what he does best, dropping guys with his really good stand-up. But right now, to say he should be ranked higher than me, I mean, if someone feels that way, they can, but I wouldn't agree. But like I said, rankings, they don't really mean that much, you know?
Yeah, and if they did, I mean, somebody who had just lost five in a row and won one fight shouldn't be ranked higher than someone who's won four in a row, regardless of who the opponent is, but I digress. Alexei Oleinik, that was a big win for you at UFC 217. I'll be honest, I thought that Oleinik was going to be a tough matchup for you given his grappling from bottom, but you made easy work of him. It didn't look like he had even a chance in that fight. Do you think that was your best performance to date if you look back at all of your previous performances?
Yeah, but only because he's my highest ranked opponent and I almost finished him. So, but I think my Houston fight against Adam Nielsen, that's my favorite fight. I don't think I did anything wrong in that fight. And the last one against Oleinik, I made a few mistakes in that one.
Yeah, when the ref stopped that the fight, and then they showed the replay where you nicked his ear with that kick, I was like, oh, this guy's gonna get DQ'd. you know, it wouldn't have been the right call, but they could have made that call and argued it. Are you happy with how it turned out? Obviously, I'm guessing the couple minutes where they were making that decision were the longest minutes of your life.
Yeah, it was very scary.
Yeah, I can imagine. It's very tough. I mean, you're a very mild-mannered guy, but you were kind of flipping out there.
Yeah, the whole time I was thinking worst-case scenario, I was worried. Like you said, I thought I was going to get DQ'd, but the more I watched the replay, the more I realized I didn't touch him. Or maybe I did. I grazed him, like, barely. Yeah. So I knew that would have been unjust to DQ me.
Yeah, for sure. And the weird thing about the New York Commission is they just stopped the fight. They don't say, well, you know, they used this instant replay, but if you look back at the instant replay, they could have justified restarting the fight, but I guess they can't once the referee waves it off.
Yeah, it's kind of like NFL when they whistle a play dead, even though the referee might have made the wrong call once the play is whistled dead, it's dead.
Yeah, they got to fix that in MMA, especially the New York Commission. I mean, if they're going to use instant replay, call a timeout. I think the refs just call a timeout, take a look at the tape or whatever it is, and then resume or make a decision. But calling the fight off when you're not sure what's going on seems a little bit short-sighted and strange.
Yeah, it was. Like I said, I'm happy they got it right, though. Like, I was going to win regardless. Had they allowed the round to continue, I know I was going to get the finish. So I feel like the W going my way was the right call. It was going that way. Inevitably.
You know, so one thing about you is, you know, I think you're very close to a title shot. The heavyweight division right now is very thin. You've won four in a row. If you beat Mark Hunt, that's five in a row. And with a win over a guy that's just got legendary status in the heavyweight division in Mark Hunt. But your first career loss in the UFC was to Francis Ngannou, and your first career loss, period. But what people don't really know about you, and, you know, I spoke to your manager, Rick, about this because him and I were hanging out at the last card, is that you were kind of training in like a high school gym for the most part. You were a high school coach. You didn't really have great training partners. You were training your boxing at a local UFC gym. Right now, you're training at Elevation with guys that are absolute killers in a great camp. What's the difference between Curtis Blaydes then and Curtis Blaydes now?
Curtis Blaydes right now. I've been doing my striking at Dwayne's, and I have a striking coach who I hit with individually, and I think those have been the two biggest reasons for my improvement with my striking and my just having more confidence in my hands to let them go, because I know I'm putting in the work with my coaches.
So So based on how you did against Francis back then, like, do you think you can hang with anybody in the heavyweight division with where you're at now with your wrestling background? I mean, you won a junior college championship. Your hands looked great against Alexei Olenek, way better than I've seen them look in the past. Is now the time for Curtis Blaydes? I mean, you're coming up on 27 years old. You're one of the youngest guys in the heavyweight division. Are you okay taking it slow, winning, you know, one fight at a time until you get to that top level?
I think I'm okay taking it one fight at a time. That's how I've done it my whole career. I don't see reason to change it. I'm not like all these other guys who have been starving for attention and they just want to toss their name out. I'm like, oh, I want to call out the champion even though I'm only ranked, like, not even top four. That's not me. I'm not going to call out guys who I haven't earned the right to that age yet. Now, Mark Hunt, I didn't call him out. He was given to me by the UFC, and I appreciate that. And after this fight, God willing, I win the fight, then that's when I'll feel a lot more comfortable asking for specific guys or even asking for a title shot. But until I put myself against Mark Hunt, I'm not looking at anyone else besides him.
And how far in advance do you plan on getting to Australia for that fight? I know a lot of people have trouble acclimating to the time change and the long flight and all of that.
That's something we're still working on, me and my coaches. They have experience more in Australia. I've never been, so I'm going to listen to what they think I should do.
Another guy I was talking to your manager, Rick, about is a guy named Juan Adams. He's a huge guy, 6'6", walks around 300 pounds with a wrestling background. Tell me what you know about this guy. Is this a guy we should look out for in the UFC soon?
Juan Adams is a massive human being. He honestly, he makes me look like a non-weight human being, which is weird. To be so big, he's actually pretty agile on his feet. I didn't want to get to see all of his hands, but I did. We sparred around for my biggest fight, and during that spar, we were both giving each other pretty good punches. I had an injury that ended that round, but I think he could easily compete in the UFC right now. I'm not saying you give him like a monster out the gate, but bottom level guys, I think he's ready for those guys like Rashard Coulter or Herman Williams. Or even a guy like Alan Crowder, a guy who's called me out, I guess, two times now since in the last year. I've already beat that guy, but I could easily see Juan taking him out in his UFC debut fight. I'm sorry.
Well, hopefully we see him in the UFC sooner rather than later. Now, before I let you go, I did want to ask you about Stipe Miocic. I mean, he's going to be defending against Francis Ngannou. From what I understand, a couple of years ago, you went in and trained with Stipe. How did you fare against Stipe when you were a more raw Curtis Blaydes?
He kicked my ass. Honestly, he was far, far, far better than me at that time. I wasn't even in his league. I was in just because I was a body and I could wrestle. Wrestling-wise, we were pretty even. We were pretty good. But when it came to, like, full sparring and stand-up with I wasn't ready for him. My man has to be respected. If I was to go in there as an amateur just like beating up on Stipe Miocic, that would have been bad news for him.
Yeah, I guess so. I would imagine that wouldn't be a great look. And but from what I understand, your wrestling was hanging with him and kind of surprised him.
Oh yeah, I think I did. Like I said back then, I was a lot heavier. Walk around like 290. I think he expected me to be more of a traditional, like, big, slow plotter. And I was a little quicker than he expected.
Well, his next challenge is Francis Ngannou, and I think that from what we saw with Francis against Overeem, he answered a lot of questions as to whether or not he was ready for that next level. Do you think that Stipe is going to be able to hold off Francis and remain champion and break the record for the most consecutive heavyweight title defenses with three?
I do. I think Stipe is an extremely intelligent fighter. I think he knows Ngannou is most dangerous within the first 2 to 3 minutes of the fight. I think he's going to play his stage, get from the distance, use his inside leg kicks, use the jab, establish his range, and just be a veteran. Use his movement, use his proper cage awareness, and get Francis on his back, put his back on the cage, I mean, and gas him out a bit. And then I think after that first round, we've already seen Ngannou out of the first round once. I guess that was with me, but I can't hear it there. But we've seen in that fight, he started to slow down drastically, and his output, it went down by almost half, I feel like, remembering that fight. So I think if Stipe can get him into the second round, I think it's his fight. I think Ngannou only wins if he can knock him out in the first round.
Well, there's a prediction from Curtis Blades. So, Curtis, you're fighting Mark Hunt, UFC 221. That's in Perth, Australia. Fantastic fight, and really a fight that will be, I guess, your biggest test to date. And, you know, a big test for Mark Hunt as well. So we'll have to see how that one plays out and how that shakes out for the rest of the heavyweight division. We appreciate your time, and thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you, I appreciate it.
Right, that was Curtis Blades, and interesting note from that interview. He talked about the first time he fought Francis Ngannou, the only time he fought Francis Ngannou. He was training at like a high school gym. He was barely doing any training. And, you know, he was able to get to the end of the second round with Francis Ngannou. Look where Ngannou is now. So Blades is someone definitely to watch in the heavyweight division. Well, Joe, it's been a fun year doing this.
It's been awesome, man.
Does our bankroll reset after next week? What's the deal? Are we starting from scratch?
Oh, now that you're losing? Oh, now that you're losing? Now that you're down and we know the tally, we're restarting? I don't know about that.
Hey, we'll see what you're saying in the new year. I mean, I could win, right?
Yeah.
I could
be up. I'm confident in my two.
Yeah, all right. Well, we'll just keep the tally. We'll keep the tally running. I don't need a way out. All right, so a couple of notes. We have three nights of fights on TSN if you're at home. Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday of this week on TSN2. You got UFC 211, UFC 218 on Wednesday at 8 p.m., and UFC 217 with Georges St-Pierre earning a title in the second division. There's the spoiler for that.
Uh-oh.
But I'm sure you know this if you're listening to this podcast for sure. That's Thursday night, 8 p.m. on TSN2. And we're also putting together a year-in-review podcast where I sit down with several journalists from the world of MMA and go over the year that was in MMA. But that'll do it for us, Joe, for this year, for 2017.
Yeah,
looking forward to seeing you in
the year. I'm looking forward. It's a little sad, too. Yeah, I'm a little sad.
Why?
It seems like I won't see you guys in 2 weeks now, so I got to wait 2 weeks. Yeah, I know.
Well, 2 or 3 weeks. I'm going to a sunny Florida, so.
That'll be nice. Yeah, be family good. Trip.
Yeah, are you going anywhere?
No. I go away enough with Glory.
That's true.
Now
yeah,
it's
travel.
Like
you
my vacation time is staying at home and just focusing at home.
You
enough
got a condo
traveling.
To enjoy.
Yeah, yeah, a lot of sleeping and napping and family and friends
Uber
I haven't
McDonald's.
Seen.
Yeah.
Uber Eats McDonald's. Yeah, I've slowed down on that. I've slowed
That's
down.
That's a good move.
Yeah, I tried. I'm slowing down on those bacon and egg McMuffins, but lately it's been Middle Eastern food.
Oh, I love Middle Eastern food.
I could eat it all day. There's I live by a restaurant called the Paramount.
Oh, yeah.
So I order
there
a lot.
I've been there many times. Yes, Paramount's great.
Oh, yeah. And I get shawarmas quite often, so that's another thing I enjoy.
There
trying
you go.
To keep my... Keep it at bay because
and you get Uber Eats so that you don't need to go outside, or you go there
when it's cold. I don't like the cold, so when it's really cold, or if I'm driving by it, but that's it.
Yeah, no. Well, it's the same as sitting down and eating at a restaurant, except the tip is going to the person that's driving your food.
Absolutely,
over, and it's cheaper than
yeah. And
there.
I just want to stay at home. Usually, I mostly Uber Eats when I'll actually order it before I get home. So the time I get home, they come within a few minutes and I'm ready to go.
There you go,
spoiled, eh? Look at us,
exactly.
Spoiled.
Well, you don't want to go outside, forget it.
No, it's too cold.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I want to thank you. You brought me a Bazooka MMA. Sweater. That's
some
a Christmas
swag,
gift.
Yeah.
I appreciate that. I'll
Thank
have to
you.
Give you something in the new year.
Yeah. I said, you promised
my door,
me.
Extra
you promised me an Aaron MMA.
Yeah. Aaron Bronstetter MMA shirt.
There we go. Let's make
a
TSN
if
MMA
that,
shirt.
If you get that screen printing, what's it called?
Print whatever, silk screening,
silk
whatever.
Screening. Yeah, you get that. We'll make Bronstetter MMA. You'll have glasses and,
perfect,
and wavy hair. And,
What do you have? The checkered blaze, the bow tie?
Yeah, exactly. I'll have the checkered
shirts. Yeah, checkered shirt, a bow tie. We're ready to go.
Designed.
There we go.
All right. Well, thank you for that. And Bazooka MMA.
That's
it. In Scarborough, Ontario.
Yeah, come see us. Yeah, come see us. Big spot. Amazing environment. It's not just for fighters. We do have world champions. If you are a world champion and you want to continue to improve, we have that. We have women's program, beginner program, intermediates, advanced, jiu-jitsu, MMA. So come check us out. I mean, like, I'm a big believer in you don't need martial arts to fight. It's a life skill. It's good for stress, depression. It'll make you a better person in life. So come to Bazooka Kickboxing and MMA.
There you go. Well, Joe, happy New Year.
Happy holidays.
Yeah. Enjoy Christmas with
you too. You and the family, and get some sun.
I'm looking forward to
some shirtless beach pictures.
Yeah, I'll make sure to post those on my MMA Instagram.
There you go.
If you're following.
Speedos? What are you going? Speedo or board shorts?
My dad still rocks the Speedo.
My dad would too. I think we stopped him eventually. My dad's an old school Italian guy for sure. He has the Speedos. I remember when we were young at the cottage. Sometimes I can see him rocking.
It's very embarrassing. I have friends that are friends with my dad on Facebook. He's posting these pictures of him on the beach in the Speedo. It's like, not a good look.
My dad's an Instagram guy, and he listens to the show. My dad loves listening, so he's listening to this right now.
Joe Senior.
No, Emilio Valtellini.
Emilio Valtellini.
Yeah, he listens to it. My sister, Maria Valtellini. My family's the biggest supporter of the show.
That's good.
My sister, Maria Valtellini, and my dad are listening. And my mom, whose birthday on Friday. So happy birthday, Mom.
My parents don't listen at all, so thanks a lot. Thanks to the Valtellini. Maybe the Valtellini family will take
probably
me in.
The Valtellinis love the show. They listen. They're the biggest fans of the show. Like, they'll message me as soon as it's up, usually about 20 minutes after my sister messages. Oh, I love the part where you did it, and my dad will
hint at it. That crazy co-host talking about again.
Yeah, what's he doing? So, I mean, they listen. So, I know the Valtellinis are at home.
All right, well, shout out to the Valtellinis. Enjoy your Christmas. Well, thanks, everybody, for tuning in. We'll be back next year.
Thanks for listening to the TSN MMA Show. For all the latest UFC news, visit tsn.ca/UFC.